Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Today, we are being joined by Dr. Gator, who is a board-certified pediatrician. He also has a really cool new book that is out now. It is called Parenting at Your Child's Pace. And we're going to jump right into all the things he talks about in his book, The Most Important First 3 Years of Life, and what you can do to prepare yourself as a new parent or a fourth-time parent, and being aware of certain things that we can do to better the lives of our children. So welcome, Dr. Gator. I want to get right into your book, but it's like, for me, ever since becoming a parent, being able to talk to pediatricians feels like the greatest connection to be able to have. And then to have like a pediatrician on text or speed dial as a mom is like also a goal, because the things that you don't think about with parenthood and kind of the things that happen late at night or wondering what to do when your child is sick, all these different things you don't really think about before it actually happens to you. So I feel like a lot of what you do is trying to calm parents down. And then this book focusing on the first 3 years, which I'm kind of, my oldest one is almost 4, so I'm a little out of, but my second one is 2, and then I'm going to have another one relatively soon.
Oh, so congrats.
I'm excited and want to dive right into all of your tips and tricks to just
love
like
it.
What we need to know and what I missed out on knowing for my first daughter. So I definitely want to know like what are the things that we need to be knowing, and also like why did you even tackle the first 3 years as being the most important?
For sure. You know, for me, I think that what I wanted to do was to talk to parents from day one. I feel like there's a great opportunity during pregnancy or in those first few months to really get to parents and talk to parents about all the things that are going on. I, as a pediatrician and as a dad, have seen the chronic disease rates skyrocket, have seen stress skyrocket in parents. And I really think that what's important in medicine is we have to start thinking more about prevention and talking about things from day one. So that's why I really wanted to focus on those first 3 years. So when we're just thinking about getting pregnant or early on in pregnancy, we can jump right in, start thinking about some of these things, feel more prepared. I feel like parents feel like they're less prepared than ever because there's so much information out there that really can be debilitating at times. And so that's really one of the reasons why I wanted to start from day one and get ahead of things.
How do you do that, though, in a way that's not kind of adding to this information overload that we deal with as parents on social media and just in the whole parenting space in general?
I think it's from identifying that fact and then talking about it and working through how to think through questions that come up. So a big focus of the book is not to tell people what to do. I think that's a really frustrating part of society these days, is there's a lot of division, a lot of fighting about what's the best way or what's the right way for parents to do anything. And a lot of times there is no one right way. It's really about thinking through what's best for your family and what's best for your child. And so I really try to take parents through the main questions that they have or that are going to come up as your children get older, and the things that I get asked all the time. And then discussing what information is out there and how to synthesize that to make a decision that's best for you. Because a lot of times there are multiple different opinions. Sometimes grandma will say something. Sometimes the internet will say the complete opposite thing. They're completely contradictory. And you're like, I don't know what to do. And you can be really, really stuck. So I think it's really important to learn And it's okay to Google, but sometimes you're going to see things that are really scary that are not necessarily relevant to you or your child, and kind of bringing all that information together and then deciding what you feel like is going to be the best for you using that parenting gut. And that's how I think we can get through most questions. There's no book to figure out how to do each thing. Every parent is different. So I think it's more important to identify what's going to come up and then figure out how we can think those things through, because it's tough. It's tough to be a parent these days. In some ways, it's much easier 50 years ago because you could just ask grandma and she'd be like, oh, you know, when did you start feeding me? Okay, 6 months old. Let's do that. Now it's like, oh, 6 months? No, it's got to be 4 months. No, it's got to be 5 months. And it could be could be tough.
And then like, what do you introduce? Then somebody says like, oh, you introduced the green beans too soon. And it's like a whole, you know, there are definitely a lot of opinions. So I feel like this idea and goal of also calming parents down and getting parents back to also trusting their gut is such an important part of this, that I think a lot of it has been lost in the kind of social media and also Dr. Google angle of parenthood. But there is so much material, and there's so much, whether it's books or podcasts or just people talking to you when you're pregnant about, you know, what you should be eating, what you can be doing when you're pregnant. And then all of a sudden you have this baby and your primary contact changes from your OB that's all about you and your body to all of a sudden a pediatrician that's focused on the baby, which is of course what your job is. So that's amazing. And it also comes with, is this right? What do I do? Is this normal? Is this not normal? When you're talking to parents, whether they're first-time parents or fourth-time parents, what do you see as kind of being some of the biggest stress factors when it comes to entering parenthood?
I would say the biggest stress factors that I'm seeing these days are, number one, just a lack of confidence in yourself as a parent. So feeling like you're not ready, feeling like you don't have all the stuff that you need, feeling like you're not going to be a good parent, that you're going to screw it. Like, am I going to screw up my child? Am I going to do the wrong thing? Am I going to miss something? I think that's a big part of our worries these days because we see so much. I think sometimes it's good to be aware, but at the same time, when you're exposed to like an Instagram stream of so many different things that you're watching, whether it's, oh, do I have the right nursery set up? Do I have all the toys that I need? Do I have all the trinkets that we're going to need in those first couple months? Like sometimes I'll get parents at the interview asking me questions about the toys for when they're going to be a toddler. And I'm like, you need to focus on the first couple of days. Yeah. You know, there are things that you need to focus on. And so we get wrapped up in this conversation and the stuff. And we forget that we don't need very much. You really don't need very much stuff to be a good parent. Money doesn't buy love. Money doesn't buy you being there. Money doesn't buy anything. I take care of some very wealthy people. I take care of some people that don't have as much means. And I've been in lots of different homes. And the reality is that you are prepared to be a parent because you have it innate within you, and you don't need all this stuff that you see online to be a great parent. I mean, in a lot of countries, like let's say in Europe, they give them a box, a cardboard box. They send you home with some diapers and some wipes and the box for the baby to sleep in. And that's all you need. You don't need your nursery all set up. Most people don't even put their kid in their nursery for a few months anyway. So we feel like we need to have it all ready. We're told that we need to have all these things done, but the reality is you don't. And sometimes if you can just put that back in perspective, it can give you a little bit more confidence and a little bit more calm to know that you are ready. You will figure it out. Stuff comes up and you just keep figuring out as you go. That's what parenting is. It's not about knowing how to do everything or being prepared for every situation that comes up. It's about caring and continuously following the lead of your kids and setting boundaries and figuring out what makes sense for you and your family. And if you do that over time, that's really the basis of what makes a great parent. It's not having so much stuff.
What do you do for parents who are, you know, you mentioned this kind of like lack of trust in themselves that they have, which I totally agree with. And I think that it's in part because of social media, but also just like coming out of a pandemic of not knowing health-wise, like what is normal? Are all of these like viruses or sicknesses or having caution, having anxiety, like all of these things that I talk to my mom or my friends' moms, and they're like, we didn't have any of this when we were raising you guys. Like, this wasn't even a thing. That, you know, with moms especially and dads, but that are just kind of overcome with this anxiety that they're overwhelmed by everything that is coming their way, this information overload. Is there something that you have found to be successful when it comes to going back to trusting your gut as a parent and your instincts naturally?
A lot of times if it's patience, it's really having discussions and trying to help that parent think through the discussion and come up with a decision that makes sense for them. So it's not telling them what to do. It's kind of talking through and reminding them, well, there isn't exactly right answer, and letting them make that decision and seeing things work out. I think that that's really helpful. Sometimes it's just a reminder or a discussion around how so often when you see a parent who is having a third child or a fourth child, it's, you know, they're not even calling me anymore. It's like, why didn't you call me 3 weeks ago for that thing? You know, whereas yeah. a parent the first time, you know, you're worried about everything, which is fine. I mean, it's okay to be concerned, but at the same time, we don't want to be over worried. And so I think it's just reminding people and putting things in perspective and reminding them, you know, okay, you get sick. Well, what do you do when you get sick? What do you do when you have a cough? Okay, well, it's not really different with your 1 year old. So, you know, you do some of those same things, you think it through. And if you're worried, then of course, you know, we're here to help and we will, but it's just instilling that confidence. And the other thing I think sometimes is if you do see parents that are over worried about just about everything, then sometimes it's a reminder to them that that worry is not necessarily helpful for your child. The worry, over worrying is also not a great thing. I mean, kids see that and they pick up on it. So sometimes it's important to remember about self-care, remember about ourselves, take care of ourselves, get those few minutes in that we can gain some of that self-care, or we have to work on some of our stresses and anxieties. Maybe that means working with somebody or working through it, whatever it is. I mean, it obviously depends on the level of the stress and anxiety, but it doesn't serve our kids to be over worried about things. And so just sometimes that gentle reminder can kind of put things in perspective and help parents get back to a little bit more of a balanced place.
I was watching one of your interviews and I saw that you really approach parenting at all ages in a kind of 360 degree view of the parent, the, you know, what we're consuming in a day, whether that's social media, the news, how we are as parents, as human beings, that being something that is absorbed by our children. So let's talk a little bit about that, because you talk about it as the seeds of well-being in your book, which I think is such a great way to look at it. Because as you just mentioned, like if we're crippled or riddled with anxiety about our kids being sick all the time or having the latest thing that's going around that we see on social media, that impacts them and rubs off on them, and you don't want that as a parent. So you talk about SEEDS, the acronym of SEEDS, as stress, environment, exercise, diet, and sleep, which sound obvious when you say them out loud, but it seems like as a society, we've kind of forgotten about a lot of those. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. And when I decided to write the book, the two big things that I really wanted to make sure came through were, number one, helping parents to de-stress. And number two, were talking about the foundations of health and really focusing back on those basic things that we can do and we should focus on to make small changes that can make a big difference. Because as a parent and a pediatrician, one of the big things that I'm concerned about is that the chronic disease rates are skyrocketing in kids. We're not going in the best direction in terms of our health. And it can feel very overwhelming as a parent when you're hearing always on the news, like, oh, this food we shouldn't be eating, or we shouldn't be doing that. And so I think if we can focus back on these basics, then we really can take back our control. And sometimes that feeling of control can be really helpful to move us forward. And so that's what really led to the Seeds of Health. I start the first chapter talking about the Dr. Gator smoothie, not a real smoothie, just kind of a play on, you know, what you see in all the books about health and wellness, and starting with a big scoop of the seeds. So just like you said, yeah, stress, environment and toxins, exercise, diet, and sleep. Nothing is rocket science here, but we aren't eating the best. We're more stressed than we ever were. We're not exercising these days like we used to. We're not moving as much. Our environment is filled with chemicals and toxins, and we've lost some of our focus back on sleep. So if we just kind of think through those things, are mindful about some of those topics, and really work towards a little bit healthier place, I think it makes a big difference. And especially if you're going to focus anywhere, to me, I would focus on food and toxins. The food that we're eating these days, even in the best version is not that great. And so I think we can all be a little bit more mindful when we're going to the store about what we're purchasing. We have to do it within reason and within our budget, but everybody can flip over and read the labels and start to become a mindful consumer. And if there are long chemical words, you don't even know what they are, then it's probably not good for you. So if we're buying a bag of chips, doesn't mean we have to never buy a bag of chips and we only buy broccoli, but you could read the two bag of chips, same price, figure out which one has less sugar, fewer preservatives, better ingredients, and we can purchase that one. And if we do that, every little bit adds up and every little bit makes a difference. And I think that's a really important place to start. And if we make small changes, then that's going to move things in a better direction, which we really do need to do at this point. I mean, one out of two kids have a chronic disease, and that's not where I would love for us to be as a pediatrician. I think we need to start being more mindful so that way we can decrease those numbers.
When you talk about chronic disease, just for people who maybe new in the parenting world or not necessarily be familiar with what you're referring to when you talk about chronic diseases, can we name what those common ones are that you're seeing a lot?
Sure. So I mean, acute disease would be like you're getting sick, you have a cold, cough, runny nose, a stomach bug, that kind of thing. Chronic disease would be something that's more consistent and persistent. So thinking like about things like allergies or asthma or mental health concerns or autoimmune conditions. So something that's longer term that you might need medication for, or that kind of comes and goes over time. We're just seeing those diseases skyrocket. And a lot of that, I think, is from we're not getting the nutrients that we need in our food, and we're surrounded by too many chemicals and toxins. And so the bodies are inflamed, and it expresses itself as one of these kinds of conditions.
So these are much more common in children today than they ever were before. And is that because of the food we're consuming, the lifestyle that we're living, or is that because of awareness in the space? That's always something that I feel like we go back and forth with our parents' generation about, is like, these were never a thing when you guys were little, and all of these things that you guys talk about, and this wasn't a problem when you guys were little. And there you can go to the kind of the angle of, well, there wasn't awareness of it and therefore it wasn't diagnosed, or that our food has gotten so terrible and our lifestyle has swung in the complete opposite negative direction of, you know, being on screens, being inside, not moving our body and being outside, and really saying like, this could have been around when we were growing up, but the lifestyle that we lived was so much better that our kids need to go back to that today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no question, it's both. I mean, we're definitely better at diagnosing things. We're definitely more aware of these conditions. So parents are more likely to bring in the child to the doctor. Doctor's more likely to make a diagnosis. But that, to me, as somebody who has been in as a pediatrician for many years at this point, I mean, even just in the last decade, it's increasing so rapidly. It's not just better diagnosis. That's a small part of it in my mind. If you look at the statistics, it was maybe like 5% of kids had a chronic disease 20, 30, 50 years ago. And now it's like 50%. So sure, we're better at diagnosing things, but that does not equal what is going on. I mean, what is going on is that we are not eating as good food. Our lives are sedentary, we're consuming too many chemicals and toxins, we're surrounded by too many chemicals and toxins, and that is leading to this chronic disease epidemic. And I don't think we should be dismissing that as just better diagnosis. There's just no way. I mean, we can all think back to when we were kids, there wasn't peanut allergies like there was. I remember there was like one child, I don't even necessarily remember, maybe somebody had asthma, but it just wasn't like it was today. One third of kids today have diabetes or pre-diabetes. I did the talk on diabetes a few weeks ago, and I was trying to look back at the statistics, and you couldn't barely even find a child with type 2 diabetes 20, 30 years ago. It didn't exist in the data. The research says, oh, well, we don't really find it now. The average age of onset of diabetes type 2 is 13. This is called adult onset diabetes because it was something that we only saw in adults, and yet now we're seeing it in kids. So to chalk it up to just better diagnosis, I think, is doing a disservice to our kids. We don't know the answers, and that I think is frustrating. We don't exactly know what's causing this. I think it's probably many things, but what we do know is that there are a lot of little common sense, basic things that we can do to improve our health. And something like eating healthier, and there's no downside to that, whether that's going to be the thing that's going to prevent the chronic disease, who knows, but it's still going to be good for you. It's still going to be good if you eat more fresh food, if you cook more. There's very little downside to that. And I believe that especially our parents' generation, we really moved from a time where cooking was so important, family time was so important, and we have traded that a little bit for convenience and for things that are cheaper, which, you know, convenience can be good, cheaper can be good. But if the trade-off is health, at some point, there's a downside to that. And I think we're starting to see that where there's a lot of convenience, a lot of cheaper, a lot of faster. And that's, well, what are we losing for cheaper and faster? A lot of times we're losing health. And so I think we need to get back into balance. Not all of medicine is bad, right? I mean, we used to live till we were 40 and now we live till we're 70. So there's a lot of good stuff that we've learned over the years, but there are also some things that maybe we have to step back and say, hey, you know, our parents and our grandparents did some of these things better. Some of the rates of chronic disease were lower. Maybe they were living healthier in certain ways. And let's bring it back into balance and see some of these rates go back down.
When you talk about like allergies and asthma and these chronic illnesses that kids are being diagnosed with, I always go back to the fact that like when I was in elementary school, we brought peanut butter and jelly sandwiches to school all the time. We had them in our snacks for apples and peanut butter. It was never a thing. And I remember with my youngest brother, who's 8 years younger than me, when our elementary school first became a nut-free campus because of a peanut allergy, it was, you know, a really big deal for that one child. But it seems like now there are kids all the time with a variety of different allergies, whether it's a nut allergy, a gluten allergy, a soy allergy, a sugar, refined sugar allergy. Like there are a lot of these things that are being thrown around as being allergies, some more serious than others. We've talked a lot about on BDA Baby about screen time, the importance of getting our kids back outside, which I'm so excited about because I've always been somebody who's like, I was raised to always be outside. Like my parents raised me that if the sun was out, that you're outside. There's no screens on. We were allowed to watch TV on Friday and Saturday, and that was only for 30 minutes to an hour. So I love that idea of going back to how we were raised as kids of being outside in nature and exploring, getting creative and not being on devices and being told like, oh, we need to be eating healthy. That is, it sounds obvious as you're saying, but being mindful of what's going into our food and what the ingredients are, how things are being made. And then also like these toxins, these environmental toxins and things that we're being exposed to, for me can be overwhelming. Like it seems like they're in everything. It's everywhere. So when you talk to parents and try not to get them overwhelmed, because you were saying when you talk about the seeds of well-being, the most important ones are the what you're putting into your body and also the toxins that you're surrounding yourself with. How do you talk in an approachable way that doesn't cause parents to freeze with the amount of things that they think about being exposed to every single day and exposing their children to?
Right. That's a great question. I think it is so important to not get overwhelmed by this. I think the key is that kids are resilient. We're resilient. We can handle a lot. So we don't have to focus on every single thing. But what we can do is start to be mindful. And we can start to be conscious and aware with whatever we do and whatever we purchase to just start thinking about these things. Just like food, if you're purchasing anything for your home, any sunscreen, makeup, anything you're spraying on your body or their body, just be mindful. Start reading the ingredients, start reading the labels, try to buy the things with the lowest chemicals, try to prepare the food more. You can put some plants in your home. If you're drinking tap water, maybe you can get a filter for your tap water. If you're in a place that doesn't have the best water, like these are the things that we can control. You can't control the air out there, but you can put some plants. You can't control the water in your taps, but you can get a filter. You can get an air purifier if you live near a highway or something like that. I mean, there are little things that we can do and it adds up. So it's not about being perfect because there's no such thing. Most kids and families can handle some chemicals and toxins. A lot of these things have been around for a long time, but I think we're getting to the point where it's just too much and we're so focused on convenience that sometimes we don't take that extra time. And I think that even just seeing in my practice, the patients that come to me are just self-selecting a little bit more mindful of some of these things. And I rarely see these conditions, not because I'm some magical practitioner that does anything amazing or all that different. It's just because the parents and the families that come to me are more mindful about wellness. And I think that goes a long way. So there's nothing to be too nervous or concerned about. Just mindful. Just think about these things as we're moving forward. Every little bit matters. And we learn in a continuous loop. It's a cycle. We don't always know things. If you learn about something that you were doing when you're, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, and you're like, oh, well, now they have more research, or maybe I didn't even know this thing was a problem. Don't let it stress you, because your body can detoxify. Your body can get rid of most chemicals and toxins, but now you're aware you do something different. So if you're purchasing some food before and you're like, oh, I didn't realize that there were food dyes in there and I don't want to give my kid food dyes anymore. Well, just don't buy it anymore. And then you buy something different, and most likely that stuff has already passed through their body and it's not an issue anymore. So if we're mindful, I think that's going to get us a long way.
I like the idea of also like not beating yourself up as parents of kids who are older based on the amount of research that we have today and that continues of our knowledge of, you know, the food that our kids consume, and then also just everything that our kids consume. If it's media, if it's environmental, if, you know, there are so many different things that we have so much awareness now that I think so many parents look at and they're like, did I mess up my child for life? And I like the angle of what you're saying of there's always room and space to change things and also change what, you know, your family is absorbing and digesting and making changes.
I just wanted to say that. And it's not, I mean, even for me, I'm not some woo-woo guy who was like, you know, into like, you know, living in the mountains or whatever. Yeah, I ate fast food when I was younger. I did all the things. I didn't think about it. I mean, my parents didn't think about it. And I had a lot of gut issues when I was younger. I didn't even realize it, right? And then luckily I met my now wife and went through, and, you know, she's much more holistic minded. And so I just started being exposed to a lot of this as I went through training and after meeting her, and changed things up very slowly. And I feel so much better and I've been healthier than ever. So it's not that you have to beat yourself up. You just, once you learn new things, then you do things differently.
I want to conclude on the subject of anxiety. It's in your book a lot. Whether it's anxiety in children and also mostly anxiety in parents. As we have said many times in this interview, there's a lot of information. There's a lot of do it this way, don't do it that way. Feed your kid this, don't feed your kid that, which can be helpful and also can be very stressful and overwhelming, because it can feel like you're never doing anything right. And are you messing up your kid? Are you going to miss something, et cetera? How do you gently help parents that you come into contact with who are dealing with anxiety in the parenting world of, you know, whether it's illness anxiety or just anxiety about being a parent or, you know, raising kids in the world today? There's a lot of anxiety I'm sure you see amongst parents for a variety of different reasons, but is there a way that you communicate with them that's been effective about like overall anxiety in parents?
Yeah, I think it depends on what we're anxious about. I mean, there's so many different forms, especially in parenting anxiety. I think there's a lot of anxiety around social media, like you mentioned, and sometimes the discussion would just be around shutting it off or minimizing it. I mean, you don't have to have a feed that makes you nervous. You know, if there's stuff out there, you know, just go back to looking at puppies and funny videos. Like, your feed doesn't have to make you so nervous. You know, you could do it. I mean, I always joke, my wife, you know, she's like really cleaned up her feed and she just sees architecture and puppies and like funny jokes, and she never knows what's going on in the world. And I'm always telling her, but like you could do that. You don't have to be nervous about those things. If you're very worried about certain conditions, I mean, sometimes getting the data can be helpful, talking it through with a trusted you know, pediatrician or a practitioner, like just what are the actual risks? You know, sometimes we forget that something's one in a million, and we're not that worried about jumping in a car, but we're worried about, you know, something that really has very, very little risk. So just sometimes putting things into perspective. And then again, just reminding people how to think through some of these things, synthesize these things, and just try. You just go forward one step at a time. And I do try to remind parents over and over. And I think that's what helps most, is just reminding parents that they can do it, that it's within us. We have an innate parenting skill. Trust your gut. Even as a pediatrician, I trust a mom's gut, a parent's gut more than anything, because you do know when there's something that comes up. You do know when there's something that's really concerning. And we are very lucky these days that we have emergency services. You can call 911. You can go to the hospital. I mean, we have these things. And most of the time, it's not an emergency. You have time. Even if you're concerned about something, you have a lot of time in general to kind of figure it out and see which direction things go. A lot of times parents mistake some mild symptoms for something that's more emergent just because they haven't been through it yet. And so it's just getting that perspective and the reminder that, like, you're not going to miss something super severe, and everything else, you have a lot of time to kind of see which direction it goes, talk to your practitioners and get checked if you need to. But we very rarely need to be worried about something. Out of the 1,000 texts that I get from parents, or the 1,000 visits I get in any, every year or whatever it is, like, one or two of them are severe, right? And I think sometimes that can give parents a little bit of perspective that even though you're worried about something, the doctor's not usually, it doesn't mean you should never be worried, but the reality is that when a parent is worried 99% of the time, it's not super severe, it's not emergent, it's not urgent, you have time. And sometimes that can help give you a little peace and, like, okay, I'm worried about this, but probably it's not an emergency. So let me take a deep breath. Let me think it through and think about what my gut is telling me. And your gut's usually right.
I love all of that advice for parents. And I also, something that always helps me is this idea of, like, that our parents did this and they didn't have any of this information that a lot of us are exposed to every single day. And while there are little changes that, of course, we wish our parents had made, maybe about what's in the paint on our crib that we were chewing mm-hmm. on, that, we turned out relatively okay. So mm-hmm. we're going to be able to do it too as parents. I think that gives, that at least gives me confidence. And I know that it gives my close friends confidence too, is kind of putting these things into perspective.
Yeah. I joke about that a little bit at the beginning of the book. Like, that's really one of the big things. It's just the perspective, right? Like, we think the world is so much more stressful. It's so much harder. But realistically, like, there aren't lead paint in everything. There isn't mercury in everything. We have safety standards. We have car seats. Like, kids just, they just sit in the car. They didn't have seatbelts. I mean, right. We have so many more safety standards than we ever had. And we have an internet and we have phones. So really is, in general, much safer. We just see more of the worst case scenario. So right. We worry about things, but that's very unlikely.
Yeah, no, I love all of that. I think it's great and practical advice and information to be giving to this generation of parents. And I know, as somebody who's kind of in this sweet spot of the age group that you're talking about in your book, and also just loving all information from pediatricians in general, This is so great. It's so helpful. I'm excited to read your book and to just hear how your whole book tour goes, because I'm sure you're going to be connecting with so many parents who are wanting to pick your brain about a variety of different things, including all of the viruses and illnesses that are going around constantly. So thank you so much for taking the time to do this interview, and congrats on your book.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor.
Thank you so much to Dr. Gator for that great conversation. I loved hearing about all of the ways we can calm ourselves as parents in this world that we live in of information overload constantly. I know that I struggle with that sometimes, so I love being able to get advice on how to manage that. And I'm really excited to read this book, and make sure you grab a copy. It's out now. Thank you, Dr. Gator.